Hey guys, I just want to start off by saying thank you for listening to the podcast. But I can't stress enough how important it is for me to continue on producing content, for you to go on and leave us a review on iTunes or the Podbean app. Your questions and comments help me keep this thing going, and It's really important for the podcast. The more reviews we get and the higher up in the ranking I go, the more people I could reach. It's really important for you to do so. If you really like the podcast, we'd like to hear from you. And we would really, really appreciate the feedback and reviews. Also want to take a little bit of time here real quick to thank Phoenix Shooting Bags for their continued support of the podcast. And if you want to up your shooting game, go check them out, phoenixshootingbags.com. You can use promo code John Stallone, all one word, and purchase bags for 20% off. So check them out. This, honestly, it's a game changer, and you won't be disappointed. So phoenixshootingbags.com. Let's roll into the next episode.
Hi, welcome to the Interviews with the Haunting Masters, brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags and Triple Threat Performance. This week, we are going to talk about mostly mule deer hunting, and we are going to talk to Scotty Thompson. What's going on, man?
Another day, man. Yeah. This hectic lifestyle that we live, you know?
That's for sure. I'm going to apologize now, so if you hear a bunch of like construction noises going on in the background, it's because I'm remodeling my house still. I'm already a month, 6 weeks into it, and I'm going to freaking pull my hair out, what's left of it anyway. And, yeah, so the cabinet guys are putting cabinets up right now. So hopefully it won't be too disruptive. So anyway, why don't you give us a little rundown about yourself?
So my name is Scott Thompson from Northern Utah. Married with two kids. I'm the manager of a family-owned business called Pallets of Utah. Consumes most of my time. Also have the privilege of being tied into the hunting industry a little bit with other family companies that we have called Thompson Shooting Systems, Critter Lick, and Cast Horn Designs. So I run a busy schedule, but honestly, chasing public land mule deer is what consumes most of my thoughts throughout the day, year round.
I know what that's like. Only mine's not one animal specific. It's like whatever the season is, that's where I lose my mind, you know?
Yeah.
Except for spring, because I don't get too excited about bears or turkey. So in the spring, for some reason, I think about elk a lot. It's weird.
Mm-hmm. No bears.
Was that?
No bears?
No, not really, man. I've killed a fair amount of bears in my life, but after a while, they just don't excite me. I mean, I'm gonna go here, maybe.
Right.
I think in Arizona, I think I'm gonna go during the over the counter season. Just because I have nothing going on this spring at all.
Right.
And I feel like I need to get out and do something. I don't know. Bears here, it's hot. It's like, there's tons of mosquitoes. It's not an enjoyable hunt. I mean, it's nice to be out in the woods and be doing, you know, glassing and seeing deer and whatever while you're looking for bear and whatnot. But it's just, I don't know, for me. I used to love it, man.
Yeah. Look at the bears as you get out of cabin fever. Finally, you know, that first run to the hills. And then obviously testing some gear that you've purchased all winter long, you know?
Yeah, no.
I don't know. I enjoy it.
I do want to try to get back into turkey hunting a little bit. Just because the whole calling thing, that interests me. See, I like calling bears. But it's such a low percentage. You can call them in fine if you spot them first. Mm-hmm. So if you're spotting them first, you might as well just Freaking shoot him from wherever you're spotting him from and not call me. I guess if I was archery bear hunting, then if I went back to archery bear hunting, that's probably what I'd do. I'd go find him, spot him, and then try to call him in. That's probably what I need to do to make it interesting. Because I don't know, the whole spot and stalk, just, yeah, it's all right. Anyhow. So I want to talk to you about like your approach to the season. Like, how do you choose your places to hunt? What do you do planning? What, where does it begin? You told me, in our opener here that you're thinking about them 24/7, but where does the work begin for your hunting for that season? And how do you organize it? What are you doing about tags? Are you only hunting in Utah? Are you looking around? Let's talk about all of it. Give me your season holistically.
I mean, you couldn't have timed this any better because right now is planning time. I do think about it every single day. Something new, I'll research something somewhere. But I chase a lot of general season public land tags because I can have those tags guaranteed every single year, the same time of the year. So I will take those two or three tags and I'll put them in the calendar. They're fixed. Those are the back burners. Those are the ones that are there if I can't draw anything, if I don't get anything better. And then I start applying and looking into other options. I don't play the points game very much. I hunt. I mean, I'm young and I want to just hunt as much as I can while I'm young. I see myself as when I get older, then I'll be smarter with my points and try to do things that way. But right now, I just chase and get as much as I can in a decent amount. I mean, I lay it out on a calendar. That's step number one. I don't like to overlap them that much. And then obviously, let's like use ex Nevada for an example. We can start earlier in Nevada. It gives you at least, over Utah, it gives you 8 days or so, starting with an August 10th or a September 10th, something like that, with a archery or muzzleloader equipment. So try and get those tags, and then honestly, just looking at weapon stuff that I prefer, stuff like that. I mean, there's a lot that goes into it, but you look at it nowadays, and anybody has everything at their fingertips. You have OnX, which is phenomenal. You have Go Hunt, which is a game changer. And then obviously, Epic Outdoors Magazine, Eastman's Hunt and Fool, all those have absolutely everything you could ever need at your fingertips. I mean, you could sneak away a couple hours at work and get it done on your phone or your computer, whatever, I mean, it's there. It's not, I mean, it's getting better. And then you can take that even further and it goes into Google Earth. And then, so for guys that don't have a lot of time to be in the field, they can have a good idea of what's going on draw odds or location, stuff like that before any of it even happens. So the modern day technology is insane and it's there.
That's for sure.
But yeah, to my personal liking, I take those general ones, plug them in a calendar to fall back on. I'll apply for Wyoming, Nevada, Colorado, easy to draw units, 1 to 2 points, so I can get those every other year or every third year, something like that. And then, like my home state of Utah, I have like 17 or 18 deer points because I've never used them because I enjoy that general season. So later in my life, I'll fall on those. I don't know, I kind of have weird techniques, but that's just how I do it.
No, honestly, talking to a guy who's not as young as you are, I wish I would have did a little bit better planning when I was in my 20s for my hunting. So I have a very similar approach to you. I want to hunt as much as I possibly can. So most of my tag, allocation, or most of my money that I send out to apply goes to tags that I can draw. And right now I'm picking one or two states where they have like, super good quality, or like in Utah, for instance, I got like 15 points or something like that for the, limited draw. And I hope, to draw something in 10 years or whatever, but, I think that's a smart way to do things. I think go hunting as much as possible and then pick one state or two states for you to get that one exceptional tag that you can draw later on in life.
Correct.
So,
I
no,
mean,
that's a
anymore, I look at it, there's big bucks in every unit, every general season. It just takes a little more time. And I just think a lot of guys don't take advantage of that general season stuff because, I don't know, the odds or something on a computer or something just doesn't look up to par. But honestly, 3 to 4 years of consistent hunting an area that, I mean, you can bank on every year, what more could you ask for? Rather than, something like Wyoming where you got it every 5, 6 years. That's hard to hunt that way. I mean, it's okay if you have a program and that's the way you want to run that program every 5 years, plan on that, but I just like the general hard stuff and then just learn it, just live it and enjoy it.
And I don't know that it necessarily really needs to be hard, you know? I don't, so for Wyoming, for instance, I hunted Wyoming for, really, I haven't, the only, I haven't hunted it now in 2 years, but before that, I hunted it every year since like 2007 or 2008. And, you know, I just put in for a, you know, one of the general seasons, you know? And I had phenomenal hunting. I mean, I don't know if you could see. That's kind of hard to see because my safe's blocking it. But there's a really big wide buck back there, and that's a general season Wyoming muley. And you know, I've killed my fair share. I've killed some great goats there too. That's a great place to go, you know, antelope hunting. And the thing about Wyoming for me is literally you can hunt elk, antelope, and deer all at the same time with
For
archery.
sure.
Like
Yep,
you could
for
go there
sure.
for like 12 days and come home with three animals if you wanted, you know?
Yep.
So, yeah, I mean, it doesn't have to be hard. It doesn't have to, you know, just because it's a general season, just because you're, up against a bunch of other people. There's states like why there's why I'm going to use Wyoming again. Like I go where I hunt in Wyoming. I never, ever, ever see another soul. And it's not because I'm hiking way back in the backcountry. I can literally hunt from the highway and I still never see somebody. It's just because now if I go there during the rifle season, it's a freaking zoo. But, and that's just it. It's, you know, looking at these things that are, I think, that are diamonds in the rough, you know, people think that just because it's a general tag or easy to get tag, it's either a shit hunt or you're gonna have a lot of competition, and it doesn't have to be that. So,
For sure.
anyway, so once you figured out where you're going hunting, what you're doing, what are some of the things you're doing, especially in these out of state hunts? What are you doing to Cyber Scout? I know you mentioned the Onyx and stuff, but let's be specific about what it is that you're looking for. To pick a spot to hunt.
Okay, you bet. I mean, that can be number one. I like to try and stay somewhat close to home so I can scout it effectively. I don't like to scatter hours and hours away. And if I do happen to pull like a New Mexico or something, or way up in Montana or something that I'm going to scout, I try to plan way ahead for those scouting trips. So I focus, I live in a good area where I can get to a few different states pretty quick. So that's number one. Is just trying to make valuable use of your time. And then being flexible is the most important thing. I mean, you got to pick a weapon, you got to be archery, muzzleloader, rifle. And then once all that's laid out, that determines what type of year or what type of season you're going to be hunting and what elevation, stuff like that. So when I lay out my year, I am planning on some locations, I'll run trail cameras. Others places will just be hike in, glass, stay a couple days. I mean, it just depends on a lot of that stuff. But then, I mean, there's some gentleman that'll listen, or somebody will be like, "Well, I don't have time to get there or do that." And I have the same problem in some of these states. So I'll jump on Google. If it's lowland, I mean, I'll just look for water sources, stuff like that. And then if it's high country, I'll look for glassable locations that I can spend countless hours on just looking across country. And then I just make time to get there and see those things and see what it's like. A lot of it runs on luck, though. Unless you do the same thing every year and you can get into those locations every year and do the same thing. But as far as Cybern, I mean, I don't know. I just cover different things, different corners. I don't know, just what looks good. And then I put a lot of miles either on the truck or on the boots. It just depends.
Gotcha. Well, let me ask you this. What do you see that says this looks good to me? Is there anything
So,
specific that you're looking for? You mentioned water in the low country. Is there like, specific type of terrain or specific type of vegetation or combinations thereof or?
this year I'm planning on two hunts, one out west and one in the east of me. Neither of which I have hunted before. So, out west, I've got on Google and I've looked for every source of water, because I mean it's going to be out in the desert, that is away from high trafficked areas, away from the and where everybody else is looking, where away from everything else. And I'm just going to destroy that over the next month on my computer, just looking for every nook and cranny, everything or something that somebody's missing out in that desert. And then when I get there, I mean, I could be way off. I might end up in the other end of the unit. Who knows? But I just got a gut feeling that obviously in the desert, they're going to want water. And then trying to get away from where I think most people would concentrate. I mean, you could jump on a forum and click in a unit and see where everybody's going or where everybody recommends to go in that unit. I want to go to the other end. I want to find something odd. So like when I think in the desert and tough hunting like that, there's big deer in vast locations, and I want to find the weird one out there that's somewhere unique. To the east of me, I'm going to be hunting, the 10,000 foot stuff, and that one, I mean, I'll look on a little bit and get an idea of where I want to go, but I gotta see that one and I gotta feel that one. I gotta get there. Google Earth has a tendency to make things look a little easier to jump from one ridge to the other. So when I get to that big old, basin or something, I got to see it. I got to physically be there so I'm prepared for it. And I want to know that country a little more than I want to know the desert country because, if I can find a deer or find something in that country, I want to know how to approach it and how things work in that terrain. Also weather dependent, in the desert you can battle out a storm. In the high country, you need to be prepared to know where to go and what to do and how things work. So there's two complete different situations, if you will.
Yeah, no, that's good.
But I think honestly the high country is easier, just because they're there and they're somewhat easier to locate because the glassability, and the desert's a little harder to find them. But then you can completely flip that. Once you find one in the desert, usually he's there to stay, and you can find him somewhere close. In the high country, they can move on you and be gone. So, a lot of different options there.
Awesome. So what are some common behavioral things you've learned about mule deer over the years that contribute to your success? You're hunting all these different areas. What commonality within mule deer going from the desert, going to high country, that you keyed in on and say, well, I know mule deer are going to do this. I don't know. I'm going to give you an example. At this time of day, they're going to do this and that, and so on and so forth.
Okay. That is one thing that I love about hunting mule deer. I think when you get into that older age class, they have an Achilles heel of creating a habit or developing some ritual that they just have to stick to no matter what. I mean, I got Uncle Rex, he's 78 years old. He doesn't go to coffee at 7:05. He doesn't go to coffee at 7:25. It's like 7:18 every morning. That is his ritual. And his light, he just lives up the street from me. His lights are off at 9:04 every night. He's got rituals. That's what he sticks to. And these bucks, the older they get and the smarter they get and the more they get hunted, they create more of a ritual and they stick to it. I'll tell you a quick story quick. The first three deer I killed that were of very good quality older age class, I believe all three of them were over 190. I got an archery, a muzzleloader, and a rifle.
Nice.
All three of which were on general over-the-counter tags. And I shot the first one in 2006 with a rifle. Found him on the 24th of July. I shot him 300 yards from where I seen him in July, opening day of the October rifle hunt. The second one was a muzzleloader in 2009. Found the buck again in August. Actually, my dad found him while he was hunting elk. Watched the buck throughout August. And I later killed that buck on the sixth day of the muzzleloader hunt in a bed 150 yards from the line of the aspens where we watched him all summer. It took me so many days to dig him out of there because of, I guess, just where he was laying. But we could not find him, could not find him, could not find him. And that day that I killed him, it snowed maybe an inch and a half, and I could see him tucked back in that bed. So he'd have gotten a little smarter and changed his habits just a little bit, but he's in the same spot.
Wow.
And the third one was archery equipment, 2011 in Idaho. This buck laid in some ribbon cliffs, and he would go into that bed early morning only. And only place I could see him was like 1,500 yards away. And I'd watch him go in there every morning. He'd lay there till about 10:30, then he'd come out. So obviously I couldn't glass him, bed him, and go in there.
Right.
So one morning I went in blind. I sat there, let the thermals kind of settle, snuck down over the ledge completely blind, and I jumped about, like, I don't know, 10 or 15 of the grouse, you know, the noisy ones. I'm thinking, okay, he's not there today. But then I thought to myself, and I, at the meantime, you know, I'm like 40 yards away from this ledge. I'm thinking, no, he's there. This is his routine. He's ancient. He's going to be there. I got all the way to 8 yards, and I'm like, he's not here. He's not here. I looked over the ledge. I could see his, the top of his horns. He was still tucked in there, stuck right to his ritual. He was there, and I ended up getting him.
Nice.
So those three old bucks, I mean, they had home, and that was what they knew. That's what they stuck to, and each one tested me a different way. I mean, but at the end of the day, I just had to keep reminding myself, okay, I know these deer are here. I just got to dig them out of here.
Yeah.
So that's what I like about big old mule deer is they all just have their, they kind of have an Achilles heel. Once you find that niche or discover that niche or find that home, I mean, some have more than one home, you know, and they'll move around a little bit. But each one has that Achilles heel, and, I mean, they just got to do the same thing. So that's what I love about them.
Yeah. You know what? I realized that, too. And I got one of the stories that I tell all the time was a couple years ago in California. You're hunting blacktail. And it was literally the same day, the very next year, the same buck. I stalked the same buck. Well, I'm going to give arbitrary dates because I don't remember the exact day, but I want to say it was, let's say it was July 21st in the evening hunt. I stalked the buck in this bed underneath these oak tree that were just hanging, barely like hanging off of a big roller. And I didn't end up getting them. In the very next year, that same buck was in the same bed, the same date, the same time, everything, facing the same way. It's just crazy. Like, I think a lot of that, if you really key into it, if you look at the weather conditions, especially the wind, and you make a mental note when you see, let's say, a big buck, like you were saying, that was underneath the ledge, and you make a mental note of which way the wind is going, what the weather's like, so on and so forth, he's in that bed. Every time that weather condition's the same way, he's going to be in that bed. It's like, and I've realized that over the years. And whitetail do that too. I see the coos deer do that. I've seen eastern whitetail do that. I think it's just it's a deer thing. Elk, not so much. I haven't quite figured out the elk, early season.
And, you know, I'll be honest with you. That's probably why I pulled away from the elk. I mean, several years ago, I had the opportunity to chase a giant bull. And that bull was later harvested, like, just a few days later, like 13 miles away.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I mean, I looked
was
at
it, Was it the rut, though?
It was the rut,
Yeah,
and I
see
mean, granted
the rut
that.
you can't even the same thing with the deer. I don't know how much how often you hunt deer in the rut. All the
Yeah,
shit that we're talking about goes out the window.
you're exactly right. But I mean, that's the other thing is when you go back to mule deer, I mean, obviously the elk rut's in September. That's when everybody's hunting them. I mean, November is the deer. I have all this summer, all this perfect time before the rut to chase these things and pursue them. So everybody hunts that or loves to chase that November stuff, which is great. But honestly, the September
See,
is my.
I love rutting deer. I love rutting anything. And my approach is this. So you got to think differently. You're not going to hunt the bucks, you're going to hunt the does.
Oh yeah, for
That
sure.
that's what I started doing many, many years ago. I learned that from a very good whitetail hunter that taught me that. And once I started doing that and I applied it to mule deer, I applied it to coos deer, I applied it to, pretty much anything. And the same thing with the elk. I got better at it because I hunt the cows. Like I know where all the because the cows aren't going to change their then
Right.
those aren't going to change their pattern for the rut. I mean, not much. They might change a little bit because they're getting pressured and pushed around a little bit, but for the most part, they're going to occupy those areas. And if you've got them patterned down, those big bucks they come in.
No,
See, I need
I
a buck to
agree.
be stupid and drunk in love to me and kill him anyway because I'm not sneaky.
You're 100%
But.
correct on that. But see, my problem is like we go to Colorado every year, and I get down there and I just feel so lost. I'm completely backwards. I mean, I'm hunting the does. I'm checking the does. Different herds. I've got these different ones blocked out, in different locations. Every morning I'll run into this one. Every night I'll run to this one. I'll check. But I get so frustrated doing that. That's why I am just not a very good rut hunter. I want to know what I'm hunting. I want to know why I'm there. I want to know what I'm doing. November, I'm just kind of running around.
Nice. So let's switch gears to actually getting them killed. Let's talk about planning your stalks and what you do and what you're looking for. What do you see when you see a buck and you're like, that fucker's dead. I'm gonna kill that guy because he's in the spot. You know that you're gonna be able to kill him. And try to paint that picture for me.
Okay. I mean, I think it comes with experience, number one. And the more opportunities you get to stalk and more opportunities you get to take an animal, the better and more confident you get at it. With confidence, I think comes aggression. I am very, very aggressive when it comes to making the play. I mean, say you scout something, the buck you finally want has finally made a mistake. He's finally showed up somewhere. You know where he is. Even if you lose sight of him and he heads into some timber, I'll go steal honey. I don't care. I'm very, very aggressive. The chances just don't come enough to pass up on him. I mean, some guys in the high country will think that's absolutely insane and they'll back out and they'll wait for the perfect opportunity. And in a lot of cases, that may be true, but in general, 80% of the time, I'm very, very aggressive. And I'm going in, I'm going to get. I mean, the wind is everything. I mean, I've said this before, camo doesn't even hardly matter half the time when you got the wind in your favor. So if I can get the wind, I'm going, no matter what.
Gotcha.
And I mean, it's obviously we all want one bedded in the perfect spot, but it never happens. But yeah, just aggression is what I'm all about.
It's funny because I'm pretty aggressive too myself. Most guys, like you said, are not that way. They're very smart. Now I feel like I am. They go about it very. They only go because they're afraid they're gonna blow them out of there if it's their target buck, and then they're not gonna see him again. And I get that. I get that.
I do, yeah, especially in the high alpine stuff. I completely understand it. But I hunt, a lot of time that 6 to 8,000, and I'm in the thick a lot of the time. So when I get a visual on them, I'm going. And it doesn't bother me to still hunt with a archery equipment, muzzleloader equipment, or rifle. I mean, I'll still hunt them. I'll take my boots off and walk. I don't care. I go when it's
Nice.
go time.
So, are you doing anything special? Let's say you got one bedded and you want to go after it. Obviously this comes with practice and so on and so forth, but do you have any tricks that you employ that help you pinpoint where you need to go? Like, because I know for me, even now, I've been hunting for you know, probably longer than you've been alive. But I still get lost sometimes on a stalk. You know, you're like, oh, I feel like I'm in the right spot. Am I, you know, am I getting closer to whatever? Did you do anything specific, like to pick your routes and so on and so forth?
You know, that's a good question. I've never really thought about even talking about that. I'm guilty of it one time, believe it or not. And other than that, I think I learned so much from that one time that I'm more selective about the funny looking tree, the funny looking rock, the crack in this. I mean, I will go through it with a fine tooth comb before I make a stalk. If it's a very, I mean, if it's late, you know, and this thing's locked in his bed and I don't think he's moving, I will, no joke, I will tear it apart and pick my route in there. I mean, the one time that I didn't, it was in kind of some aspens, and I had this buck bedded archery equipment. Went in there and thought I was sitting right on top of him. I caught movement to my right, 8 yards. This buck's coming through the chaparral at me because I was off 100 yards, you know. And from that moment on, I'm just like, you've got to know what you're doing before you go. And it's just waypoints, I think, is the most important thing. Because there's funny stuff, you know. It's just like when you spot something with your buddies, you're like, oh, that funny looking tree or that rock. Or there's waypoints to use, and kind of just visualize that and take a mental picture as you go, and just knock it out, I guess, is what I'd recommend. But I
Since
mean,
the
it's
invention of good smartphones, I've actually been taking pictures too from where
yeah,
I'm
the pictures would be fine too. I mean, I mean, you could even think of a Garmin, but I hardly ever use an actual GPS to try and get to a location. I want to mentally just keep it fresh, keep it new, and just use that. You know what I mean? I don't want to try and be digging for one more piece of equipment when I don't need to be.
No, yeah, and you're worried more about this, you know, in your hand, the buck that's 8 yards away from you. So, no, I get you. Cool. What would you suggest to a hunter that doesn't get that opportunity to go put boots on the ground scouting? You know, maybe only has 7 days a year to hunt, you know, including their scouting, so and so on and so forth. What you're planning a trip? See, I do this all the time. Like my seasons are 7 days at a time. I don't have time to go to Utah. I don't have time to go to Colorado, you know, so on and so forth to go scout. So I'd like to hear what it is that you like. You kind of hit on it a little bit in the early part of the podcast, but what would you suggest things that they should do to improve their chances of success or having at least opportunities on their hunt?
I mean, number one is set the goal. What are you looking for? What trophy class are you looking for? What is it that you want to accomplish? Once you've settled that in your mind, then it's just, I mean, do you use Go Hunt at all?
I do, yeah.
I mean, geez, just plug in. That's basically all you have to do anymore, and be like, okay, that's where I can go. Once you've decided an area and you want to, I mean, just apply smart. Look at the quality of the trophies that have been taken, what's been taken. Get with your local biologists in that area. Do as much research from your house as you can. And then I think one of the craziest things is I see so many guys in this sequence, you know, they run there, they're 5 days early, they want to get a feel of it, they want to know about it, they want to see what's around, they want to be ready for opening morning. If you only have 7 days or whatever to hunt, I would say be so mentally prepared from home and you could knock that out on the last 7 days of the hunt. Don't even go to the opener. I mean, that to me, especially doing the Wyoming stuff, I've challenged myself, all right, I'm not even going to go there. I know where I want to go, I know what I want to be, unless I have a very, very particular animal. Then I'm going to be there. But in general, I'm going to be like, you know what, I'm not even going to go. I know where I want to be. I know this is a good area. This is what I'm going to do. And I'm going to go toward the end of the hunt after things settle down. So if your time is limited, do your homework at home. I mean, there's so many things and so many people out there that will assist you and get you in somewhat of the right direction. Decide your trophy, whether you want to hunt, you know, a giant and you want to wait, you know, save those vacation days and wait another year or two or three and really make it memorable. Or if you want to go out and, you know, do this every year in some location, then just apply smart and get the information before you go. I think a lot of things can be learned by not, I mean, if you can't pre-scout it and you do not have a target in mind as far as an animal goes, I think a lot can be learned and obtained by not being there early and just learning it in the later part of the season when a lot of things settle down and a lot of things work their way back to normal.
Yeah, no, that's good advice. I don't like the opener on a lot of hunts.
It's crazy. Everything goes
right. Everybody's itching to go.
I mean, I think those deer, it's like, what is it? Black Friday or whatever.
Yeah.
So everything's just shut down. Everything needs a break for a minute and then it'll restart.
I know
it doesn't
here
take
in
long
Arizona.
Either.
So I know here in Arizona, like in August, I used to run trail cameras. I used to have everything dialed in and I knew this deer was doing this at this time. He was taking a piss at this time, you know, and then freaking come opening day, all that shit goes out the window.
Yep.
It's all gone. It's all gone. It used to frustrate the crap out of me. I'd almost rather not scout if I'm going to go opening day, if I'm going to go like an opening weekend, because I feel like it gives you a bunch of false hope sometimes. And then when you get there and you got this big plan, based on the knowledge that you gained from your scouting, then it's harder to recover from that. And, you know, I don't know. Like,
I agree with that.
I feel like you're almost better off not having a plan and just going and saying, I'm going to go figure it out, you know, find them. But
yeah, no, I agree with that somewhat. But I mean, I think where I've hunted the generals in those busy, busy seasons so much, I mean, I have to have a plan. I have to know where I'm going or I just feel completely lost. And I stick to my plans. I stick to the animals I want to pursue. Every once in a while, I just go out and have fun and hunt some random new spot. And I enjoy that too, but I feel like I'm wasting time when I'm doing it. It's really weird. I have to have a plan. I have to know what I'm doing.
Gotcha. Well, if you got a couple more moments, why don't you share with us one of your favorite hunting stories?
Okay. I'm probably going to go with a general season Wyoming buck that I shot in 2014. It's a general unit that's pretty easy to draw, and a friend applied with me, and I had a goal. I'd hunted this unit since I was a very, very little kid with my dad, and I knew the unit very well. And you just never seen any big bucks. I figured they had to be there, and this was the year that I was going to put everything into it. And we'd always hunted one area of the unit, and, you know, you'd shoot the 160-inch buck, 170 occasionally. But I wanted something big. So I told my buddy, I says, I'm going to go to the most vast part of this unit, and I'm going to see what I can turn up. And so he agreed to go with me. And I remember it's like August, you know, it's like 100 degrees and it's so dusty that everything, it's terrible. And we're driving along and we come to this wash and there's a left and a right. And I says, what should we do? He's like, dude, I think we ought to go back and just go back to the normal location that we've always hunted and to heck with this. I said, no, we got to keep going. I says, flip a coin. So he flips a coin. We go to the left. We didn't go 200 more yards, and 9 bucks stood up, and 2 of them were big bucks. And I says, this is why we've been doing this all day long. And we were out in the sage, out in the flats, nothing in sight, no water, no nothing. I spent the next 2 months watching these bucks. My buddy ended up arrowing one of them, one of the smaller ones. He never shot anything with his bow, so he's excited to get that done. I pursued the one that I chose twice with an archery equipment and couldn't get it done just because of the terrain. It was so hard out in that sagebrush. It was either 6 inches tall or 14 inches tall or 14 feet tall. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I decided to wait. And the night before the opener, it opened with the rifle on October 1st. And the night before, I was sitting on a bluff. It was, I don't know, maybe probably 12 to 1400 yards away, and it was the only bluff in the whole flat where I could really get a good visual of the area without disturbing it. And I caught the two biggest bucks coming across this little sage valley, right in the same spot we'd scouted them all summer. And I watched them until dark, set up camp, went back in the next morning thinking everything's going to be fine, we'll get it taken care of. I had to walk up this wash and get into this bluff that would make everything in range. I got in there, sat in there all day, couldn't see anything. So I'm thinking, this is crazy. I had them last night right here. Where could have they have possibly gone? My brother was there with me, and I says, look, people are starting to close in. It's opening day of a general hunt, and they've been up hunting high stuff, and they start kind of roaming around, driving roads, doing stuff like that. I said, I'm going to go track him. So I looped around, left my brother there. He sat up there for maybe an hour and a half while I was tracking, and I couldn't find the tracks. I couldn't turn up anything. And then finally I got over to another little bluff, and I lost sight of my brother. And I looked back to where we were sitting all morning, and 200 yards below us, I could see the white throat patch. So for those 4 or 5 hours we'd sat there, plus the hour and two my brother sat there, those bucks never got up. They'd sat right underneath us all morning long. So I was able to close in and get it done on that buck, and he was like a 193-inch buck out in the Sage Flats. But I learned so much from that. I mean, I knew he was there. He'd been there all year. We were in the middle of nowhere. Everybody overlooked the area we were in. I mean, obviously there was roads around, but I mean, guys were just blowing by or going back to camp or doing something. They weren't actually hunting that area. And just the fact that those bucks could sit there and be that patient and, not get up, not make a mistake, and then for me to finally get around to the other side where I could just barely pick him out of there and then end up sealing the deal, that was a very neat experience. I really enjoyed that one.
For sure. Awesome, man. Well, I want to thank you for coming on and sharing your knowledge with us. Where can our listeners find out more about you? And feel free to give your family's company a plug there for Buck Lick or Critter Lick,
So
rather.
Critter Lick is, yeah, you can look me up online at Critter Lick. Thompson Long Range, we do a little bit in the long range industry, and Pallets of Utah is the main one, but that's me in a nutshell.
Yeah. Awesome, man. Well, I hope you draw some good tags for what little draws there are left. I haven't drawn shit yet, so I'm
Yeah.
gonna be general tagging it everywhere, OTC in it. I burnt up a lot of points in the last few years, so but there's still hope in a couple places. Anyway. So
No, I appreciate you, John. And is that a fan I see going in your room?
yeah, man, that's a fan that's up there.
How would it be?
It's
I mean,
just a shot. You
I
see
still
the
got the
shadow.
I still got the heater going.
It's like 80 degrees today.
We haven't seen the sunshine in like 3 weeks.
Really? That bad, huh?
Yeah,
Yeah,
it's
see,
bad. I need some of
Arizona
that
gets
sun
hot
and
so
heat.
quick, man. It's too much. Like I'm already over the hot. I'm not ready for freaking summertime yet. I can't stand it.
I
I'm in
see,
the
I
wrong
see.
place, I know, but
No, I hear you.
it's good for my swimming pool business.
Crazy.
So
No, yeah, I really appreciate your time and invite me on.
absolutely, man. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Hey guys, want to stay connected with the podcast? Check out my blog, johnstallone.me. That's www.johnstallone.me. And you could go on there. On the top right-hand corner, there's a little subscribe box. Quickly put in an email address, hit subscribe, and boom, you're done. There's a lot of great information on there, a lot of posts that go hand in hand with the podcast that we do, plus gear reviews, plus we have the signature t-shirts on there, the I Eat Fast Food t-shirts, and the Tuesday Coosday shirts. It's a really good way to stay connected with the podcast. And thanks for listening.